It's lovely to come to a church where you've, or a group where you've heard of MAF. I travel all the way over to Stafford, to Leicester, up to Nottingham, and down to Northampton, and cover all sorts of groups, Christian groups, and Rotary, and Lions, and U3A, and WI, and all sorts of people. And very many people have not heard of MAF. And one of the important things for us as a community, as a charity, is to get people engaged and understanding about what MAF does. And more importantly, in Christian communities, for you to pray for us. One of the main things I'm asking you to do for us following today is to pray for the work we do. And we have, as always, a little leaflet for you to take away, or preferably fill in now while you're here. And what we will do once that's filled in and sent out back to HQ, where I'm going to be this week, we will send out your quarterly magazine full of different stories of the work that MAF is doing with our partners in the different countries in which we operate. If we don't hear from you within 12 months, we'll stop sending it to you. That four-letter swear word, GDPR, affects us all, and so we won't be able to send it. But if you do say you want it, we'll keep sending it to you. And within that is a prayer diary, and there's a little prayer every day about some work that we are doing or one of our partners. And these are down on the front if you want to come and take one and fill one in. Please do. That'd be lovely. MAF has been around over 70 years, 72 years to be precise, started by a guy called Stuart King, who is still with us, thank the Lord. He's 95. He comes into the headquarters building in Folkestone just to make sure we're still doing it properly. And as he always says, the mind's good, but the body's not able. But he's one of the very early founders, which was started in 1947. He flew, ironically, from what Ed was just showing us, fighter planes during World War II. He came out of the war and he wanted to use planes for good. And he got together with one of his guys, one of his fellow pilots. They went and bought an aeroplane, flew to Africa, and worked out where they could fly to different places to take help and aid. And that's how it all started, and it's grown since then. This is just one of, a poster on the wall over there of the different planes we have. There are approximately 14 different types of aircraft. We have 135 aeroplanes altogether, which are operating in 25 countries. And that usually makes people go, what? But this is just one of the aircraft we operate. It's called a Kodiak. It's been designed specifically for mission work. One of our very generous benefactors in the US turned around to the company Kodiak and said, I want you to design an aeroplane that can do mission work. I want you to land on short airfields. I want you to be able to land on rugged airfields. I want to be able to carry cargo, carry people, operate on two different types of fuel, and we want it to be available anywhere in the world, operate anywhere in the world in any weather. And they designed him an aircraft. He paid the bill. I dread to think how many millions it was. And we now have these aircraft available to us. We currently have 12 in the fleet. They cost $3.2 million each, but some of them have got special adaption to them, but they're very, very useful tools. They've got bigger wheels, so they're going to land on rough airstrips, very rugged undercarriage, and they're workhorses for us. But we do operate the smaller planes, so the type you'd actually go a pleasure flight in, a two-seater Cessna, and we also have some twin otters right at the other end of the scale, one or two, which are 22-seaters. And we operate all over the world, and I'll come to that in a minute. As you probably saw in the video, it's not like quite flying out of Birmingham Airport, is it? Nor flying Squeezy Jet, as I call them, Easy Jet, or Scare Air, Ryanair. It's a little bit different. What I'd like you to think about this picture is, he's had to land on that airfield in the first place before it can take off. And that is quite typical. That's not unusual. That's more the norm for us. And the people we're serving are right at the top of the picture. And that's what he started from. So if you don't like roller coasters at Drayton Manor, that may not be your ticket. But it's quite common for us to have airfields in very remote places. And that's what we do. That particular one was in Tanzania. This one's in Papua New Guinea. Again, I'll come to a geography lesson in a minute. But as you can see, that's been hacked out of the jungle, basically cut out of the jungle by hand, so we can fly in and out. And it's very important we can able to do that. One of the things we're very important about doing is that we position the airfield so it can serve a number of different communities. So you'll see in the top left, there's small houses. There's houses around, or huts around, the airstrip itself. And there are many more into the distance. But you can see the kind of terrain that we're operating in. We have created ourselves a nickname of the Christian Airline, because we are all Christian people involved in this. There are 1,200 staff, paid staff within MAF, operating across the world, but then there are thousands of volunteers like me who go out and do different types of work for MAF as part of supporting the organisation. And one of the reasons we fly is that. This is a major highway, not that you'd believe it, in Sierra Leone. The tarmac finished just top right of the picture, and we're only 20 miles outside the capital. Sierra Leone has 10,000 kilometres of road, but only 370 kilometres have got tarmac. The rest is like this. And the other thing with Sierra Leone is, which is next to Liberia, ironically, very close next door, they have 4.6 metres of rainfall a year. In the UK, we have a metre. And so 8 months of the year, it's wet. And I think the other 4 months of the year, they're drying out. But that's the reason why. That is a 4x4 vehicle. It might as well be a boat, really. But it's not just the actual local or the nationals that get stuck. Foreign nationals get stuck as well. This is one of our teams going out into Myanmar. Now, those of us who are old enough to remember, it used to be called Burma, but it's now Myanmar. We've taken 6 years to get approval to go in there and build an airfield. It took us 4 years to get approval to fly into the country. So that gives you an idea of the kind of barriers we're having to get through all the time. And we use the power of prayer to help us with those situations, to work with those nationals, those local government officials who are not Christian. They're probably other faiths. And therefore, it's a long and slow process. But we do get there. These guys are volunteers like me. They are specialists in designing airfields, building airfields, maintaining airfields, whatever, and they give up their 2 weeks of their holiday and they'll fly to wherever in the world we've been asked to position an airfield. And most of the time, the local community has approached MAF and said, we would love to have an airfield. If you'll place one near to us, we can then do so much more work. We also have many of our partners approach us and say the same thing because they are desperate to get medical aid in and also other important pieces for that particular community. But these guys go out, they'll spend 2 weeks looking around where's the best place to put an airfield. They'd need to make sure it's reasonably flat, not that you believe it looking at the last picture. They need to make sure it's not in any severe weather condition areas. They need to make sure it's positioned close to communities. And then they mark it out with white paint, spray paint, on the floor. And we're talking 400 metres long, probably about 10 metres wide. And then they leave the local people to go and cut it out. And they'll cut it out basically on the white dotted line. And then they go back, however long it takes them to chop it out and go and inspect it. We'll fly an aircraft in to make sure it works, and then it's operational. So that's how we operate, is building these airfields in different parts of the world. It's another example of why we need to fly. This is in Kenya. This is a major highway. This is like an interstate in Kenya. Not that you believe it. The trucks are queuing in from the top of the picture, the trucks queuing in from the bottom of the picture, and the roads got washed away in the middle in the rainy season. So it's a very challenging situation. You've probably seen this picture already. But as I said before, the airfields are cut out of the territory. And what you've got to remember is in many parts of the world where we operate, and I'll show you where we are, where we operate in a minute, grass can grow to this high within a week because of the hot climate. So we rely very much on the local community to make the airfield sustainable and own it. And they really do. They are very good at maintaining these airfields to make sure we can get in and out. As you can see, we cut it just big enough to get the wheels down. So probably no bigger than your front drive. But we cut the vegetation down either side as well, because it's very embarrassing when you lose your wings when you land and take off. So that's another thing we have to think about as well. So we have to train the local people. A lot of these people we go to have never seen a car, let alone an aeroplane. So they've seen an aeroplane before they see a car. So we have to make sure they keep all the vegetation chopped down as well to do that. And I'm just going to talk about one example of the kind of people we help. And I apologize in advance for my pronunciation of the name, but Imnya. Was a girl who's got no feet. The picture on the right here, she's about 7 years old. But when she was a small baby and her mother went out of the mud hut which they lived in, she crawled into the fire and she lost her feet. But it then took 3 or 4 years for somebody to find this out. And it was a Baptist priest, bottom left hand in the picture there, who heard her crying inside the hut and went in to go out and find out what was going on and found she'd got no feet. He then introduced her to the local charity, the medical charity, Jean Francière, and they then flew her to a hospital and got her into a series of operations which enabled her to have artificial feet. Now she's going to school, she's having an education, and she can be actually back in the community. In these particular communities, the culture is that the girl is very valuable because they can get a dowry for her when she gets married. If she's not able to work and not able to look after her husband, then she doesn't have any value. But now she's able to have value because she's got her legs, her artificial limbs, and she can go back into the community. I talked about some of the partners we're involved with, and they're not a few, they're a lot. We are almost like the infrastructure for for these operations, these particular charities to operate. We provide the links to them to go and do their work. As you can see, there's many on there that you'll recognise, I'm hoping anyway. Save the Children Fund, UNICEF, WaterAid, just to mention but a few, World Vision. There's some that you may not be familiar with. In the top right-hand corner, CBM, Christian Blind Mission, and I'll tell you a little story about that in a minute. Oops, banging the mic. And then down in the bottom right-hand corner, HALO. Now, I said we support all sorts of organisations. We support not just Christian charities, but other charities and what are called NGOs, local government organisations. So we fly people and equipment to wherever it's needed to help them in that particular operation. People say to me, how do you raise your money? Well, we raise our money by charging an airfare. So if the organisation can support being charged an airfare to move their personnel about, we'll do that. But if they can't, then we say, no, that's part of our mission. That's part of our giving. But if there's one example, and 2 years ago, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, went to southern Sudan to fly about. Well, he can certainly afford an airfare. So he gave him a proper airfare, so we flew him about based on that. But also rely on donations, and obviously many benefactors assist us with that. But the charity in the bottom right-hand corner, HALO, is not a Christian charity. You may remember it from years ago when Princess Diana was the trustee or one of the patrons of it. Prince Harry's now taken over that responsibility, and they work around the world removing landmines from various areas of conflict. And they've removed hundreds of thousands of mines from different parts of the world. So we support organisations that are working towards the common good of mankind, as well as those who are Christian-based. So that's just a flavour, but 2,000 is the total. Now, geography time. I did tell off for nicking this off the website to put in his profile, but anyway. The bits in red is where we are, as where MAF operates. There are two sides to MAF. There's MAF UK and there's MAF US. That's purely because the two guys who started the organisation, one went to America and Stuart stayed in the UK, but they both work together. We have an umbrella organisation called MAF International, through which we share experience and knowledge and spares and understanding of the aircraft. So they operate in some of the other areas of the world which are not shown on here. But as you can see, we're on the major continents of the world. Obviously, Central America and then South America, as you can see there. Brazil is a very big one. And of course you say, well, Brazil, that's a major nation. It's one of the growing economies. But the reality is they've taken a tumble in the last few years and they're struggling. And in the peripherals, on the outer edges, in the jungle areas of the Amazon, they still haven't got the basics of life. And so we're involved in supporting those organisations. Central America, sadly, Haiti was hit with a very large hurricane and earthquake over the last 4 or 5 years. We have base in Haiti, and we've been able to support doing the work that is necessary to bring that community back in. And we work with people like Samaritan's Purse. Samaritan's Purse flying very large aircraft, big jumbo jet cargo, into Haiti with full of equipment. And then they split it out into our small aeroplane and we pop it all over the place that needs to go. So we work in that way as well. Africa, which sadly has been a continent in desperate need for a very, very long time. We've got a very heavy presence there, as you can see, with all the red that's there. We have a training base in Uganda. We have a large maintenance and training facility in Uganda where they have training captains, and we also have flight simulators, which I'm sure the kids would love to have a go at. And then on the far right-hand side, Asia area, we're looking at Papua New Guinea and Indonesia, which sadly has been hit only this last few days with a very serious tsunami, so we'll be involved with that. And then a little red tip on the top of Australia, and people say, why are you in Australia? That's a First Nation, it's quite self-sufficient. But the reality is that little red tip is called Armenia Land. That's where the native Australians have congregated and now are, and the Aboriginal people have their main sort of grouping in that area. Again, we have a base there, we have a maintenance base, we have a training facility in that area. And all the aircraft on that side of the world, on the right-hand side, come down to there to be maintained. And every sort of so many thousands of flying hours or actual operations, they have to have a complete strip down and rebuild, and that's where they come. The day-to-day maintenance is done in the field, either by the mechanic associated with the aircraft or the pilot mechanic. We have those type of persons as well. But Armenia Land is a very important part of our operation. And as with many parts of the world, we will be training local nationals in how to help us with operating the aircraft. There's many jobs they can do. There's obviously flight management, there's loading the aircraft, fueling the aircraft, killing the aircraft, marshalling it, and all the other things associated with it. So they help with all those type of work, but we are now training local nationals in maintenance of the aircraft, and we even have some pilots from Pakistan who are actually training with us. And that's a very important part for us to be able to leave the work to be done for them and move on to the next thing. So quite important. The red blob in the top right-hand corner, many people don't know what it is. Anybody know what it is? Mongolia. Did you say Mongolia? Yeah, thank you. Mongolia doesn't look that big, but it's the same surface area as Europe. And Europe has 400 million people in it. Mongolia has 5.1 million. So you can imagine the distances we have to cover flying in that country. It's sandwiched between China and Russia, as you can see. And we are heavily involved in that area of the world, working with that particular operation. And as you know, there was a very serious earthquake in Nepal about 5 years ago. And a lot of the team from that operation went down to Nepal and worked in Nepal. And we rented helicopters to get into some of the locations because even our aircraft couldn't get in there, landing on 200-meter long strips. They still couldn't get in. So there's a very strong presence in Mongolia with the work that we're doing. I did say that the aircraft that we talked about, the Kodiak, has some adaptions. Oh, let me just show you something else before I talk about that. In the what I call the armpit of India, you see a little red blob. India's the triangular country sticking down into the Indian Ocean, and there's a little red bit in there. That's Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a very poor country. Six major rivers arrive in the Indian Ocean through their territory. And because, again, of the culture, you will find that the poorer people live on the sandbanks of those particular rivers. So when the rivers flood, they're the ones who suffer. So we're working with a lot of local charities, a lot of organisations to make that work sustainable, give them sustainable living, to teach them how to build a house on stilts, how to grow crops that will work in very watery conditions and things like that. And as a result of that, we need one of these. So this is a float plane. We've now got three of them in operation around the world. The latest one actually went through the UK in March this year on its way from America, where it's built, to where it's going to be operating in Indonesia. So that's the aircraft on the left. That's actually taken in the Solent down near Portsmouth when it came in and flew in there. The one on the right is the one that's already in operation. And one of the charities we work very closely with in Bangladesh is Mercy Ships. Again, a charity who have converted cruise liners into hospital ships. And they position them in different parts of the world. They've got one almost permanently based in Bangladesh. And people, again, volunteers, give up their time and their skills to go and work on these ships. So doctors, nurses, and medical staff fly in from all over the world and give 2 weeks, 3 weeks of their time on board the ship. And one of the great things with the float plane is we can go straight to the airport where they've landed on their national air carrier, put them in the airplane, and fly them straight to the side of the ship with that, which means we maximise the amount of time they're actually able to do the work for the charity with their skills and for the people of the community. So that's a very powerful tool for us, the float plane. Oh, sorry, white cat in the snowstorm. This is another idea of just the kind of terrain we're involved. Can anybody spot the runway in there? Yeah, the straight bit right in the middle. Yeah. But it's just to give you an idea of how small these airstrips can be. And you can see there's a community just south of that. But there are other communities off to the top right and the top left of the slide. There's another community on the far right, which is actually only about 5 miles away. And in there is a doctor who can actually help with medical requirements. He belongs to one of the many charities we support. Now, to get to that, from these villages to that particular village, is 4 days of walking. And what you can't see is the jungle is above your head. So you're actually walking, there's no set paths, you've got to hack your way through. And if you need medical assistance most of the time, you take one of your family members with you to make sure you get there. And so that's why we have to fly them. We can do that trip in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, depending on the weather. So again, another a good example of how powerful the tool is that we have in terms of the of flying. Just one more story, and then I'll show you another video which will give a bit more background to some of the charities we support. I talked about Christian Blind Mission, CBM. This is the work they do. Now, this wooden hut could be anywhere in the world. It's put there by one of the charities, actually, Surprise Community Spaces, as it's called. And we fly materials. Yeah, we fly materials into different parts of the world to build schools, to build community helps and things like this. And this is typical of what it is. This particular one is actually in Kenya. And it's Christian Blind Mission do a medical safari. So the word goes out. They're coming in to do cataract operations in this particular case. And all the people who come and do those cataract operations are actually trained staff who do it as a day job and give up their holidays to come and do it. So surgeons and medical people come in. So we fly all the people in, all the equipment and into these facilities to enable them to do it. And one of the interesting things is the message goes out. that it's going to come. People spend 4 days walking to this particular hut to be where they are. And as you can see, they just plonk themselves on the ground and wait their turn. And they have a long wait sometimes because they're operating 14 hours a day. An operation will take 20 minutes to half of an hour, depending on how bad the condition is. Cataract is quite common in Africa, purely because of the bad water they've got, and so to a certain extent, the bad diet they've got as well. And that's something that is very important to us, to be able to give them their sight back. Because every person and family in those communities is important to the work of that family being sustained. So they come and sit down, as you can see, and it caused a bit of a problem with all these people arriving and sitting down. Because they then sat there for 4 or 5 days waiting their turn. And so what we did is we nicked an idea from Sainsbury's deli counter. Any other supermarkets are available. And we gave them a number when they arrived. So they got a numbered ticket, and they could then go off and make camp and whatever they need to do to enable them to be able to do be ready for their operation. And then they're called by number, and they've worked their way through. And when we finished, we again helped pack all the equipment up, load it into the aeroplanes and fly them out. And what's left at the end of it, apart from an empty hut, which is the marvellous thing, a pile of sticks, about yay big, because they've all had sticks to walk to where they get to be, and they don't need them once the cataract happens. And one of the lovely stories come out of this recently, and again, if in this quarterly magazine, it'll tell you, exactly says that the... the brain stalled. That one young girl came with her family to have a cataract operation removed. A family member brought her with her and her children. She had a cataract operation, and she could see her children for the first time. So that gives you an idea of the power of the work that we can do because of this ability to fly people about. So, just a little funny on the side before I have the video, because my able assistant is busy working away. We raise money in a number of different ways, I've said, but in this particular case, we collect postcards. Now you say, why postcards? Well, one of our members, one of our volunteers who lives down in Essex, somebody has to, and he's a vicar, he's been collecting postcards for 30 years. And about 20 years ago, he started selling them for MAF. So we actually collect these postcards, and he gave us a presentation at our national conference in March about what he does. And it's absolutely mind-blowing. But he's got a double garage full of postcards. He's got a friend's double garage full of postcards. And when we all turned up at the conference, we all brought the postcards that had been given, and he had a people carry it. Well, there was only enough room for him to sit in the seat to drive home at the end of it, but it was thousands of postcards. But he regularly posts them on eBay. He has, at any one time, 1,000 posts on eBay of postcards he's selling, and then the ones that are not really worth a great deal, he bundles them into 1,000, sticks them on eBay for 50 quid, and they go for 50 quid. And the interesting thing, most of them are bought by people in China, who like the sort of culture that we've had, and they spend more money shipping it from England to China than they do for the £50 for the cards. But anyway, that's an interesting twist. But the cards, the ones that have got any value, will go for anywhere from £5 to £420 per postcard. He raised £25,000 for us last year selling postcards. The year before that, he raised £30,000. So he does a fantastic job. So if anybody is keen on eBay and wants a bit of spare time to kill, he's only too pleased to have people help him post stuff on eBay and manage the stuff on the eBay network. Because often his skill is looking at the card and going, that's got a value, that hasn't. But somebody can manage, that'd be fantastic. So if you don't mind, I'll leave this box with you. Don't worry, I'll assemble it. It's not like an IKEA job. And if you put postcards in here, and then Ed or whoever can give me a bell, I'll come and pick it up and we'll ship them out, and they'll help us to raise money for MAF. But just one of the weird ways that we raise money